Hello, everyone. I'm so glad to meet with you today. I got here pretty early. The train arrived early, and then Jack came and picked me up, and we set the chairs up, and I was out in the rose garden just kind of thinking about things and smelling the roses. You really can't smell them out there. They're beautiful. And when I came back in, it was like there were about 20 people here. I'm going, okay, well, maybe everyone's decided they've heard enough from me. I'm glad to see everybody here. So he asked me to speak about how did I become codependent or emotionally immature and how can I grow up? And so that's what my focus is going to be. And actually, it doesn't matter very much about what the title might be. It's still pretty much the same. Codependence, I always start by saying what codependence is. Now, some of you have heard me say this before, but bear with me. So codependence is a state of emotional immaturity. Okay? What that means is that while your body grows up to be its chronological age, your emotional maturity level stays young. And as you grow up in the families of origin that you did, which, you know, let me just say right off the bat, I know they did the best they could. Okay? So before everyone starts thinking, well, my parents did the best they could. I know that. I'm a parent, and I know that I did the best I could, and I had them. I know they did the best they could. That's not what this is about. Now, I will say this, that sometimes they really are mean. And sometimes, for whatever reason, they're sadistic, whatever, they can be mean and nasty, and they seem to enjoy it. Most of the time, that is not the case. So when you grow up in families that are less than nurturing, where your childhood needs and wants are not met, and you're made to feel ashamed or bad for having those needs and wants, your body grows up, but you are emotionally stunted. And that's why it's hard to have adult relationships, even though everyone in here, I think, is an adult. Like, you go and you get attracted to somebody, you try to have a relationship with them, and it blows up, and you don't know why that keeps happening over and over again. And the actual reason is pretty simple. Your body might be one age, your intellect might be well-developed, but emotionally, think of it this way. You have this grown-up body with this grown-up mind running around doing whatever it's doing. And we know that we get in relationships a lot based on how we feel. And so we get this grown-up body with either a 5-year-old making those decisions about who you're going to get in a relationship with, or a 10-year-old, or a 15-year-old. But, you know, if you're 65, your 65-year-old isn't there yet. Right? So you might be 65, trying to get even in a friendship, and you feel 5 years old and act 5 years old whenever you're in the relationship. When this happens, we call that codependence. So yes, it is about relationships, but it's not, you are not codependent on anybody. Codependence is a group of symptoms that you experience if you're an adult. Now, children are not codependent. You have to be an adult to be codependent. Children are always, always, always acting their age. So actually, they're the only one sometimes in the room who's acting their age. And when I see parents going crazy because their kids acting their age, telling their kids, act your age, Who needs to be acting their age here? She wondered. So you see, children cannot be codependent. You're not codependent on anybody. Codependence is how you feel inside. And there are 5 core symptoms, and you've probably all read them, but I'm going to go over them again. So the 5 core symptoms of codependence. Number 1, the first core symptom has to do with self-esteem. When you have codependence, You don't have self-esteem. You have esteem based on what you think you are in relationship to other people. Now, as soon as you do that, you don't have self-esteem. You have other esteem. And so how people act this out on a day-to-day basis, that you have to figure out whether or not you think that person that you're interacting with or that you're even standing next to or somebody you don't even know, you determine whether or not that person is better than you. And if you determine that that person is better than you, then you go into less esteem, like no esteem. If you determine that that person is less than you, then you feel better then. That's not self-esteem. Self-esteem is that you know that you have value because you breathe. Period. And so does everybody else have value because we breathe. That's all we need to know. And if you're in a situation where you're making determination about your level of value or your level of worth, based on what you think that person is or who that person is or what that person's value is, then you don't have self-esteem. And the reason, you know, when you're in a situation like in an acute codependent phase, you're always going back and forth all day long. Let's see. I go in the grocery store and I see somebody in there that, say, looks like they have less than me. So I go one up. And then I run into my doctor. Now I go one down. Then I go out to the parking lot and somebody's banged into my car. Now I go one up. That stupid idiot, right? Now I'm one up. Now all that's happened in a period of 20 minutes. So you see, I'm going up and down all day long. And then I wonder why I don't know where I stand in this world. I don't know what my value is. And if I'm going to be in relationship with somebody, I have to either be expressing to them and telling them about all my accomplishments and all my thoughts and all my great ideas and all of my years in recovery and everything in order to get them to like me. It really doesn't have much to do with, I'm sharing this to be known by you because I have value in you as well as me. It's like, well, I need to share all my stuff with you so that you don't know what a champion I am. Or I listen to you tell me everything about you, and then I determine whether or not I think I'm better than you based on what you tell me. You can't have meaningful and intimate relationships when you're in that frame of mind. You'll always be bouncing up and down all day long from the minute you get up until the minute you go to sleep. So I always tell people, when I go through these five core symptoms, I like to give people simple tools that you can use to deal with each one of these core symptoms every day, all day. And you don't have to have a PhD to tell you about it. You don't have to read a book about it. It's really simple, and I'm all about simple, all right? So how you deal with your issues around codependence and, self-esteem every day is that you just simply find the commonality with everybody you see. And when you find yourself going one up or one down, say, okay, wait a minute, what do we have in common? What do we have in common? Now, sometimes that can be a challenge. It really can. Like, last Sunday morning when I got up and I saw what happened in Orlando. And I got really, really sad. And I took, I take a minute, all right? And I think, okay, sad, that's good. Sad, as soon as I start getting anger, now I'm going one up, you see. Okay, was that boy or young man or whatever, was that young man who slaughtered all those people, did he say when he was a little boy, I think I'll grow up someday and slaughter a bunch of people? He didn't do that. Now, I don't know what happened to him. I'm not happy about it. But I feel like an appropriate response when there is a situation occur in that way is just sad for everyone. Sad for him, sad for his parents, sad for his child, sad for all those people, sad for all their family, sad for all their friends, sad for all of us, that we experience this, right? It's not just something you do in a room. It's the way that you live your life. So you see, when I turned that on, I was immediately hit with this just overwhelming sadness, and I thought to myself, that's appropriate. There's a huge loss in the world. Huge. And whenever I start getting mad, I go back down. Because you know that anger, that can just be a wall. Feeling that sadness and pain, that hurts. But if I get angry, then I can keep it all out there and I can feel better then. Okay, it was kind of hard for me. I mean, I don't know how many of you have ever heard me speak before. Can I just see? Okay, quite a few. For those of you who haven't heard me speak, so I'm a lesbian. And so when I saw what happened, I was doubly sad because it triggered me. It triggered me back to the 60s and the early 70s when I first discovered that I wasn't like all those other people, and no wonder I kept banging my head into a wall trying to be in relationships with men. I thought maybe I was just crazy, but no, I was just a lesbian trying to, you know, a square peg in a round hole kind of thing. And so I had a lot of, you know, back then it was hard. Okay, so I got triggered. That didn't mean that I went back and said, oh, I think I'll sit here and visit all those horrors of my early life. I think I'll just sit here and feel worse and worse and worse. No, that would be codependence, right? So I thought, wow, that really, I remember how that was. And so then I was able to have some more compassion for what those people were going through. So you see, having appropriate sense of esteem. If just imagine, tell me to say this, I might say it more than once. People say to me often after or during question and answer, do you think everyone's codependent in this country? Yes. Yes. I do. Yes. And do I think I have the answer? No, but I don't think I am part of the problem necessarily, okay? I do think there are some simple solutions. For instance, imagine what would happen in Congress if everyone had self-esteem. Right? I don't have to prove anything. I'm not better than you. I'm not less than you. I don't have to come out fighting. That's what kids do on the playground. So yes, I do think it is like a really core issue in our country. It's a hard thing. And especially if you grow up in families that are less than nurturing. And culturally, we're young anyway. We really haven't been around as a culture very long. So in my estimation, and it's just my estimation, we're about 13 anyway. And we keep trying to make adult decisions when, you know, across the board, we're pretty young. So I'm going to go back to self-esteem. So you say, what do I have in common with that person? What do I have in common with this person? Whenever I feel myself going one up, one down, better than, less than, I just say, what do I have in common with that person? And it gets me right-sized right away. Okay, so that's one thing. The next core symptom has to do with reality. Now, people who have codependence, because they're emotionally immature, have a hard time knowing what their own reality is. And what that means is that if you find yourself constantly saying when someone asks you, well, I don't know. It's like, would you like to go to the movies? I don't know. Would you like to go to dinner? I don't know. Would you like to get married? I don't know. Or they're saying, I know, but I'm not going to tell you. In their brain, I know the answer to this question, but I'm not going to tell you. And I'm not going to tell you, maybe it is a nasty thing, but most of the time it's like, I'm not going to tell you because then you won't like me. You'll reject me. And one of my favorite things that I hear with people who have codependence is that you'll abandon me. Asterisk one. The only one that can abandon you is you. So if someone walks away, they're not abandoning you. They're taking care of themselves. Children, if you walk away from them, you know, I have a child. I'm a mother. And I remember when he was about 6 months old and he could start to recognize that there was someone in this room that he really needed to have there all the time. That'd be me. And as I had to do was walk around the corner to the kitchen, you thought that I had just decided to walk out the door and never come back. Screaming and crying, where are you? Okay. He was feeling abandoned because he was 6 months old. I have known adults who, in their misery, feel abandoned when somebody's walking out of the house. They feel abandoned when their spouse or their significant other goes to work. That's a hard place to be. When you're feeling abandoned, it's usually because you're not taking care of yourself. When you feel abandoned and you're an adult, it's because you've walked out on yourself. You're either deciding that I'm going to do something that I know isn't in my best interest. I'm going to go back into that relationship that I know has nothing for me, or that abuses me or neglects me, or is nasty to me, or I'm just simply not getting my needs met. My adult needs. Okay? So if I go back into that, I'm a volunteer, not a victim. But if you walk away, then I'll feel like you've abandoned me again. When somebody tells me, well, you know, so-and-so abandoned me again, I say, well, you clearly need to get to a CODA meeting. Because if you're getting abandoned again, first of all, when they left, they were probably taking care of themselves, because if you're so young emotionally that you feel abandoned because somebody goes off hiking with their friend and you feel abandoned by that, you're feeling so young emotionally, you need to get yourself grown up. You need to get yourself feeling emotionally the same age chronologically or emotionally as you are chronologically. And then if they've abandoned you again, then I say, get to a CODA meeting today. Go every day for 90 days. Because you're still not getting, if they're not there, if you don't feel like your needs are getting met and you keep going back, why are you doing that to yourself? See, when you're a child and that happens to you, you really are a victim. And with codependence, one of the ways that codependence happens is that you get victimized at different ages, and at each one of those ages, that age you are, your experience being that age, gets stuck. And so we call that an ego state. So you have a lot of those. And especially if you grow up in a family that's less than nurturing. I'll give you an example. If you grew up in a family where nobody was there, you were always asking, there were busy people everywhere, but there you were down there trying to get somebody's attention, and they just wouldn't give you any. So of course you felt neglected. Of course you felt abandoned. Now you're trying to get these people's attention, and they won't give it to you. All right? So you're, say, 3 years old. And so in this moment, you're three, and you really, really are so afraid, and you really want someone to be there for you, and they just are too busy. And it's happened, there's a situation that occurs, and you develop an ego state that for the rest of your life, you'll remember what that feels like. And I bet you already, you can probably remember one of those if you have them, if you have memories, that you actually might remember some of those when you just felt. So then you grow up, and that becomes an ego state that you get triggered into whenever you think you keep trying to get somebody's attention and they won't give it to you. It's that pretty soon you get triggered into that ego state and you feel 3 years old. And so how do you know you're feeling 3 years old? Well, you're an adult, and this person that you're trying to get your needs met with keeps refusing. And instead of saying, you know, I'm just not getting my needs met here, I think I'm just going to have to go through grief and loss a little bit, walk out and try again, or look at myself, or go to a CODA meeting, or whatever. And instead, I'm over in the corner just crying and crying and crying. Crying and crying in the corner, you know, in a little ball. You know, people say, I just curled up in a little ball and started to cry. And I say, oh, gee, you know, what happened? Well, they left again. It's like, oh, okay, you're clearly not in your adult ego state. I mean, it's sad when a relationship ends, but to curl up in a little ball sounds like a little three-year-old who just got left. I've seen them. Okay? So that's when... That's an ego state. That's a three-year-old ego state. And there's five-year-old and four-and-a-half-year-old and 10-year-old and 13-year-old. You know, whenever you bounce up from something with your dukes up. Now, that's not exactly an adult reality, okay? That would be like a 13-year-old ego state or a 10-year-old ego state. So essentially, when you get emotionally triggered and you feel less than your age, it's helpful if you turn your cell phones off. It's helpful if you say, how old do I feel right now? Because in your recovery, in codependence, it helps to know what happened. Getting your history straight. Not as a way to blame, but as a way to know what happened to create the situation. We're not blaming them. First of all, if you're codependent, you're an adult. It doesn't do any good for adults to stand there and blame somebody for their misery. It's good to know what happened. To get as clear as you can, a succinct history of your life. Okay? So that you can know, oh, there's that little three-year-old Donna Jean. Yeah, I remember her. And that felt bad then. And I know that's a trigger. So now I got to get myself grown up before I open my mouth. That's the key. Before I open my mouth, I want to get myself, my 65-year-old self, on board at all times. Because I am accountable for what I say. And I am accountable for what I do. I am not accountable to anybody but me for what I think and what I feel. And so if I'm sitting there in my three-year-old ego state wanting to, you know, throw my hands around and kick the floor, as long as I'm not doing it, it's nobody's business but my own. And it's useful information so that I can go, oh, I'm feeling three right now. I better do a reality check. There's that reality thing. The reality check so I can get myself grown up. And it's a simple thing. I just say, I'm Donna. I'm 65. I'm a therapist. I have a son. I have a partner. I live in Seattle, Washington. And I just say all the things about myself. As a 65-year-old woman, it doesn't take long. But it's good to know. Because I'll tell you what, when I get behind the wheel of a car, I want my adult ego state to be there. When I go to work, I'm not the only one that would like my adult ego state to be there. I think anybody that's coming in to see me would really appreciate that too. When I'm going to interact with my spouse, I'm sure that she would really like it if the adult ego state would show up. When I'm talking to my son, at all times, from the time he was a little baby and now, my adult ego state needs to be on board. And the only way I can do that, because I too have codependence, is that I just need to sit back, say, how old do I feel right now, and get myself grown up. We're all in better shape when we do that. For instance, going back to our Congress, just imagine if everyone in there acted their age and had self-esteem. I mean, things might actually happen. Right now, they don't. So that's a very helpful tool that you can take away today. Getting yourself to be an adult before you act. Now, when I say reality, there are some basic parts of your reality that's pretty simple, and it would be good for you to know what they are. First of all, your body. That part of your reality is a reality that you present to the world. It's where your soul lives. It's my body. It's my primary source of transportation. So, I want to treat it like a really good source of transportation. That means I feed it right. That means I get it lots of fluids. That means I get it sleep. What happens if you drive a Maserati 1,000 miles without stopping? Well, I don't know, but maybe it likes it. I don't know. But I know this body here doesn't like that. This body needs rest. This body needs sleep. This body needs good food. Okay? So you think about, that's what I present to the world. Sometimes this body gets a surprise. Like yesterday, I went to get my hair cut. And I was really surprised by what happened. This is kind of new. I looked in the mirror and went, oh. But I tried to stay my adult self and not go, what the, you know. I sat there quietly, like I tell you to do. And I say, okay, not a lot can be done about this right now. This too will pass. In a couple of weeks. Okay. So I said, and she's horrified. She's, oh God, I didn't mean for that to happen. I go, it's okay. It'll pass. It'll grow. Don't worry. It's okay. Inside I'm going, oh my God. But that's me and my body, right? I'm paying attention. And I know it well enough that I know when something is a little off. And that's good, too. Because if something's a little off, I know to go to the doctor. I know, too, well, I need more sleep. Okay, so this would be you and your body. Another part of your reality would be how you dress, what you wear. It's like it's appropriate to wear what's appropriate for the occasion. It's appropriate, I think, you know, and yes, I'm a little older than some, I think it's appropriate to cover up your body when you're in public. I just think that. Part of that is because I work a lot. I mean, I have 40 years, 38 of those, almost 39, has been in addictions and mental health and psychiatry, right? So I was doing the addictions thing before it was hip, slick, and cool in my profession. And I work a lot with sex addicts. And I know how much they struggle when people decide not to cover up in public, for one thing. Like, talk about getting triggered. It's not appropriate. All right? So, okay, so we cover up in public. We don't have to cover it at home unless we have little children around. Then we should cover up at home. Or teenagers, then we should cover up at home. But it's like, we cover up for a reason. Right? And we decide how we're going to dress this body every day. So another part of our reality is what we're thinking. We call that our thinking reality. Now, to my knowledge, our thoughts are not policed. I could be wrong. I don't think so. So my thoughts are my own. And it's good to know what your thinking reality is. Because when you're awake, you're making decisions all day long about what you're going to do. It would be good to know what you're thinking before you do those two things that you're accountable for, what you say and what you do. So you say, okay, this is my thinking reality. Now, I may think something. I may think, you know, if I'm in a particularly, like at the train station. I rode down here on a train. I'm at the train station, and I see everybody with all their kids. And, of course, somebody's got to be over there just being abusive to their kids. I'm sorry, I'm just like a radar. I look over there, and I say, that's not very loving. That's not very caring. I see the children in shame attack, you know. And I'm thinking, that makes me mad. I wish those parents would not do that. I really wish they wouldn't. And that thought is my own, all right? Now I make decisions about what I'm going to do with that thought. And on occasion when somebody's been hurting a child physically or really, you know, screaming at the child, I go over and I will say something. But, you know, if I don't know what's going on, I say nothing and I just observe, because if something does happen, I will say something. I will call 911, and I have, or I will intervene on some level, because it's not acceptable. I mean, if I see some woman beating up her husband over in the corner, I'm certainly not going to say, oh, none of my business, right? So if they're beating up their kid, I'm sure not going to say, oh, none of my business. I am going to call 911 and deal with it in that way. But that's my thought. I can decide whether or not I'm going to act on my thoughts. And then there's my feeling reality. My feeling reality is how I feel. Now, in our culture, if you look at the media, if you look at how, you know, how we are in our culture, boys are trained to feel two feelings. Joy and lust, okay? I'm not saying all boys. I'm just saying as a culture, we reinforce this. So when little boys are crying, we tell them, Bob, buck up, Buster. Just, you know, get in there and buck up. Also allowed to feel anger. When they're afraid, come on. You know, I'll give you something to be afraid about. Only sissies are afraid. If they're in pain, come on, shake it off. So basically, don't feel any of those feelings. So little boys, they get mad. They're the ones fighting on the playground. Pretty much, you know, some little girls are, but, you know, fights on the playground are usually between little boys trying to deal with their feelings because we don't help them. And then they grow up and they feel joy, they feel lust, they feel anger. And I worked in an emergency room for about 4 years of two trauma centers. And I saw this early, before I ever knew the word codependence. Geez, before I was ever in recovery. It was back in the day. And we would get a phone call, because there was a phone call, from like an emergency, an ambulance driver saying, we're coming in with a, you know, a 32-year-old male with multiple trauma. And for us, in the emergency room, what that meant is that you met him at the door with a stretcher with 4-point restraint. Because unless he was unconscious, you had to fight him to treat him. Because they felt pain by beating people up and screaming and yelling and getting really angry. And if they were afraid, they did the same thing. It's like all of the feelings that would come out were anger. And so we had to keep ourselves safe and keep them safe before we could even deal with them, before we can find out their name. So if you grow up in a family that's less than nurturing, you probably feel all your feelings with anger. You feel all your feelings with joy, or you feel the happy joy. The happy feelings is joy. You also might feel like, well, if you're happy or if you're sad Or if you're lonely, then you should have sex. Now, women, we all feel most of our feelings are this. Whatever it is, we've got tears coming down our face. If we're angry, we cry. If we're afraid, we cry. If we're in pain, we cry. If we're angry, if we're sad, if we're joyful, almost all of our feelings, as long as we're having those tears, it's okay. Okay? It's like people stay away from us, right? If you're angry, people stay away from you too. It feels too vulnerable. But here's the deal. Have any of you ever tried, when you're in a great amount of pain, say you're in a great loss, say you've lost something very dear or someone very dear to you, and you're in just so much pain. You ever tried to just not have that pain? Well, I'm done with this now. Okay, joy time. Does that work? No. Because of all those levels of reality, your feeling reality is the one part of your reality that you can't change just because you want to. You can't. And so you kind of are what your feeling reality is. Now, what I know to be true in recovery from codependence is that men have more access to feelings of pain and fear and sad and lonely, and they don't try and cover them up, and they like it better. And women have more access to their anger, which is really good for us when it's appropriate. But when you have access to all those feelings and you know what they are when they're happening, you're more you. That's when you really know who you are. Because that's a thing you cannot change just because you want to. You could change your hair. You could change the way you dress. You can change the way you think. I mean, I hope so. Okay? It's like if somebody gives me new information, I can change the way I think about something. But to change the way I feel requires an enormous amount of time and energy and effort. And that energy and time and effort means that I have to really look at myself and I have to go through the feelings and I have to work my program in order to really experience the change. Like if I am, seems like I'm sad all the time, or if I'm angry all the time, or I have a wall of fear that I keep everyone out with, or a wall of pain, I'm always upset. I'm always in pain. And I get sick and tired of that. I can get that changed. Not because, I'm done with that now. It's because I start identifying what it is, what my traumas were, how I was impacted. I start to change the way I act. I don't let those thoughts that I used to have that would make me feel that way and reinforce it, I don't let those continue. I change the way I think. And when I change those things, what you notice is that after a while, you start to feel different. And that's, why would you do all that work if that wasn't an end result? You start to feel different. You feel better. You feel more hopeful. You start to realize, well, I'm not a victim anymore. If I'm still feeling like a victim, I'm volunteered for this one now. Right? When you're a volunteer, you can do something. Okay, so that's the second core issue, reality. The third core issue has to do with moderation. Now, for addicts, we know what this is. Well, we know that we don't know what that feels like, but we know what it is. It's what normies do. And for us addicts, we know that that's not us. It's like, in our world, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing in the extreme. Okay? One end to the other. It's like, so we quit drinking, and then the only thing we drink is water. And we get real rigid about that. Or we quit drinking and we drink 3 gallons of coffee. Okay? One end to another. The fact is, in our culture, moderation is like a four-letter word. I mean, if you're moderate, people think you're boring because you're not bouncing all over the place, because you're not doing all these extremes. But moderation is really key if you want to have some stability in your life, when you want to have a sense of solitude and serenity. Moderation's kind of required, because serenity isn't something that you feel. Serenity is something that you just have, you know. You know, it's a sense of knowing that you're not here all alone, that there is a power greater than ourselves, and that we can trust that whatever happens, it will pass, and we'll be okay, so we don't have to bounce all over the place with a bunch of feelings. So moderation. How do you find out what moderation? Oh, let me go back on that reality thing. Stop saying, "I don't know." And stop thinking, "I know, but I'm not going to tell you." That makes you start to own your own reality. Make yourself know. If somebody asks you, okay, a moderation, I would suggest the way that you can get some help with your moderation right away is to find somebody you think has moderation. Say, you know, they don't seem to be all wrapped up in drama over there all the time. When they talk in meetings, I don't hear that their life is going from one extreme to another. That looks moderate. I'll ask them. And, you know, I'll tell you a really quick way to know about that moderation. If you're always feeling like, I'm always in some kind of crisis, you're not moderate. Because moderation doesn't feel like that. The fourth core issue is knowing what your adult needs and wants are and getting them met appropriately. Now, some of you have heard or been aware that I have this workshop called the Legacy Workshop, and it's like a four-day intensive to like plow through your trauma, your childhood trauma. And you know, it's like, okay, don't go out and change everyone else after you do this. I tell everybody don't do that, but you know, sometimes people just can't stop themselves. And one of the things I was like, okay, now I know what my adult needs and wants are, and so I'm going to go tell people who should meet them. Not exactly what I have in mind, okay? But knowing what your adult needs and wants are, for people who have codependence, that is a challenge. Why? Because your childhood needs and wants were not met when you were children. And when they're called needs for a reason. Childhood needs must be met. And if they're not, they just morph. And you think that need you're putting out there is an adult need. And it isn't. Okay? I will tell you what some of those childhood needs are. Unconditional love is a childhood need. It's a child's birthright to feel unconditionally loved. To have somebody be at your beck and call whenever you want them to be, that's a child need. When you're hungry, to get immediate satisfaction from that, somebody feed me, that's a child need. When you're too tired, to get cranky, that's a child need. When you want to go out and play because the sun's out, child need. When you want someone's attention because you feel like the world will come to an end without it, that's a child need. These are childhood needs. These are not adult needs. And when I hear people, I don't know what else to say about that. Anyway, I know that there are more than people here. So when someone says to me, well, you just don't love me unconditionally. It's like, yeah, that's good. I have to say to the partner, that sounds pretty adult. And so what does that mean to you? Well, I need them to love me unconditionally. If you have a need to feel loved unconditionally, start with yourself first. Because if you got that need met as a child, you do love yourself unconditionally. You feel like you have value because you breathe as an adult. You don't have to convince anybody. You don't have to get anyone's approval. You feel that worth yourself. Anyone in here that's an adult, and you all are, knows, if you really think about it, is adult love unconditional? No! No! It's not unconditional. There, we have conditions on our relationships with other adults. We may not know what those conditions are. I would suggest you get to know what they are. In SLA, we call them bottom lines. Okay? It's like in other situations, we might call them bottom lines, but unconditional love is something children need to have. And here's the deal. If you got those needs met as a child, they're done. Now, it's too late for everybody in here, but it's not too late for your children. Right? If you were unconditionally loved by your parents and by other adults who were in your life, you aren't sitting in this room. I begged my son to come. No, actually, he said, Mom, are you going down and doing another talk? Portland? I said, yeah. He says, oh, I want to come with you. And I said, great, I'll put you up in the front. Everybody can see what a functional adult looks like. And he has his moments, okay? Because he's still growing up. I mean, he's 28, but, you know, the longer their age, you know, their age span goes, it's like takes a little longer for him to grow up. But anyway, he's pretty adult. But then he was off to Quantico over the week, and he's learning all these things because he protects us. And he was learning all these things that are really important right now. And so when he called last night, he says, Mom, I'm exhausted. I don't think I could get on the train with you and go down to Portland. And I said, okay, thanks for letting me know. And he goes, okay, well, maybe next time. And I say, well, maybe next time. Maybe there will be a next time. But, you know, it's like he didn't feel guilty, didn't feel ashamed, didn't have to make up some big excuse that, you know, went on and on forever. It's like, Mom, I'm just exhausted. I can't do it. Okay. There you go. Nobody has to feel guilty for the rest of their lives. It's like, I didn't do that for my mother. And I didn't make him feel guilty. Oh, I could have done a number, right? How many times are you going to say, blah, 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 and I thought you were coming, and now I'm going to be, I'm going to be disappointed, and blah, blah, blah. But it's like just functional adults having a conversation. Like, that's what self-esteem looks like. I don't have to make up excuses. No is a complete sentence. Okay, so if you wonder what childhood needs are that you still might have, are they childhood, are they adult, ask somebody that you think has a grip, and it's all you have to do is listen to what people say. You know, if they're talking about, and here, you know, let me tell you this, having no needs is not functional, okay? So it's like when people get in recovery, sometimes they go from all needy, gotta have somebody take care of me, pay attention to me, do everything. Then they go over here and needless, wantless. That's called a problem with moderation. Okay? And, you know, all of these things interact, all these five core symptoms, they interact. But you say, okay, if I'm not going to be really needy anymore, if I'm only going to ask to get my adult needs met, then as soon as I ask, and this is the other part of it, one is knowing what they are, the other one is ask to get them met appropriately. When I ask to get my needs met, that means that I am willing to hear the word no. And I say, and celebrate it. Because if you're in relationship, friendship, primary relationship, you know, if you've got adult children that you want to spend time, whatever it is that you're having relationships with, and you ask to get a need met or a want met, and they say no, then you go, hooray, they're taking care of themselves. I want the people I love to take care of themselves. I don't want them to not take care of themselves so that I'll get that, what, need met in the moment. So I say, yay. Now, I will say this, that if I keep going and trying to get that need met, need met, need met, and I keep getting no, 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 then if I'm in my functional adult ego state, I look at that relationship and go, I don't know if that person wants to be in a relationship with me, and I don't know if I want to be in a relationship with somebody that says no when I keep asking to get my needs met. And that's after I've determined whether or not their adult needs and wants. That's after I've figured out that, you know, unconditional love isn't part of the package. If I keep getting no, then I say, I better listen to that. But initially I say hooray. Then the fifth core issue is boundaries. That's one of my personal favorites. It's the hardest thing I've noticed that people have in dealing with recovery of anything. You know, now, when I say of anything, I would tell you that people who are drug addicts, alcoholics, sex addicts, love addicts, love and sex addicts, gambling addicts, shopping, spending shopping addicts, debtor spending addicts, food addicts, anorexics, you name it, when you're acting in a way that is extreme and you have harmful consequences that you ignore and keep doing anyway, I call that an addiction. Okay? If you have an addiction, you should be here because this is the core symptom. Once you get in recovery for that addiction so your brain's not spinning around like a top, then you're ready to deal with the core symptoms. What made you become codependent? What happened? And that's what I'm talking about. All right? So the fifth core symptoms is boundaries. And boundaries is the hardest thing that people have to deal with. Well, for one thing, and I think this is just life, okay, it's a crowded place, you know? And when other people are around, you've got to be kind of thinking about your boundaries on some level so you can take care of yourself. And when there's people around all the time, it can be kind of exhausting. But it's kind of important for us to do. We have to think about, okay, what's going on around me? Not because I'm nosy, but because I need to take care of myself. And that doesn't mean that you're doing something over there that I don't like, so I'm going to march over there and tell you to stop. That means that I pay attention if something's going on over there and I don't like it, I need to, you know, as long as it's not going to hurt me or cause damage to me or someone else, I just need to go do something else. Not, you know, tell them they can't be that. Tell them, like, you know, I'm gonna use this as an example. Like, I'm pretty old and I've marched in a lot of gay pride parades. And when I was young in Phoenix, we marched in what we lovingly call Gay Pride Minute. It was a little dangerous down there then. There were about 10 of us. March, go home. Everyone okay? Yeah, everything's okay. It's changed a little bit. Sometimes, not so much, but, you know. But marching in these, you know, one year in Seattle when we were having a, we were marching gay pride, but we were also marching for domestic partnership because it was up in the legislature. And my wife and I happened to be at the front, and we were carrying a flag, a big, big flag, and we were right at the front carrying. And just feeling it, you know. And this guy came barreling up, yelling some Bible verse at me, and telling me I was going to go to hell and spit on me. And I thought, oh, that's really a violation of my boundaries. And my wife, who's a police officer, didn't take too kindly to that. And, but she's a functional adult, pretty much functional. And she just said, you know, I think we ought to get off the front line. And I said, I think you're right. So we went to the back. Now, would I have liked to stay on the front? Yeah, it's less crowded up there. But it also didn't seem to be very safe for me in that moment. And so, you know, it was just a matter of, there's a boundary. Woo, somebody's getting a little close, getting a little offensive there. I think I should take care of myself. I'm not going to fight unless my life is threatened. And, you know, what I learned in one of my self-defense classes was the first word when somebody's going to attack you anyway is no. I didn't yell that because it would break your eardrums. But you're supposed to say it as loud as you can. Because most of the time, if someone really is going to attack your body and you just, whoa, you know, you just stand there and just go, no. Most of the time it just shocks the crap right out of them. And they leave. And then if they don't, you need to know what you got to do next. But most of the time that does it. And when a family member calls up and says, you know, I really need you to, you know, I have 15 minutes of story, and then I'd really like to borrow $200 from you. No. Complete sentence. When you say it that simply, it's not, you know, people don't argue with you. You know, as soon as you start to explain, rationalize, justify, basically you've told the person, okay, I'm opening myself up here. If you can give me a better reason, you know, you might be able to get what you want. No is a complete sentence. Can I have that? No. Can I have this? No. Can I have a rate? Can I have a reduction in your rate? No. Just no. You'd be surprised. That's the end of the conversation. Unless you really are, you know, baiting somebody, which if you're doing that, are you in your adult reality? No. Now you're acting like a 14-year-old in the locker room. Okay, we'll see about this, right? Remember, it is a complete sentence, and boy, I'll tell you, when you have been raised in a family where no wasn't an acceptable word, isn't that the first word you learn practically? No. You know, it's like, parents, yay, my kid can say no. I hope they can say no when someone asks them to use drugs, when somebody wants to have unprotected sex. I want them to just be able to say no. And you say no, you're in your adult. If you're backing up and trying to, you know, well, you know, no, I don't think so. Well, you're not convincing anybody. Okay, so that's part of a boundary. Now, there are boundaries that keeps what doesn't belong to you out there. This is boundary chi. I call it boundary chi. They call it other things in other places, but I just say boundary chi. Because it looks like some kind of a chi thing, right? What doesn't belong to me stays out there. What does belong to me stays in here. Boundaries, first and foremost, is a system of self-containment. Self-containment. This is so key. Self-containment means that as I go around in the world, and I have to be awake for this, okay? I have to be awake for this. That I make decisions about what I say and what I do. That's self-containment. It's not complicated. You're over there doing whatever it is you're doing, and that is your boundary system, not mine. And if I determine I don't like it, depends on whether or not I have a relationship that's meaningful to me, all right? But if just in the world, if I don't like something, I'm just walking away from it. It's not complicated. No one gets hurt. No big drama. I don't like that. I'm walking away. Now, if it's a relationship that means something to me, like, say, with my mother. My father's dead, so that's finally over with. Sorry. No, I'm not. The world's a better place. And I know this is taped, but that's okay. There's a reason I'm standing up here. My mother, though, she's still alive, and I always call it, I go back to see my mother, and when my father was alive, going back home, I just call it going back to the scene of the crime. Okay? So I go back to the scene of the crime, and before I got in recovery for codependence, I go back to the scene of the crime expecting it to be different. Isn't that insane? How many people have ever done that? We're all insane. So that's because I didn't get it about boundaries at the time. I was still back in the day when, they were teaching us about boundaries. How to set boundaries with other people. Which basically was, I want you to act this way and I want you to act that way. And if you're not going to act this way, then I'm not going to blah, 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 blah. And it's like, wow, that was really controlling. I just call that now negative control. Now, I will say this, because we're all accountable for what we say and what we do, and we have these things we call talking boundaries. They're not like talking boundaries. It's just a way of communicating with somebody that we have a relationship with, no matter what kind of relationship it is. And we say, when you say this or when you do that, I feel this way about it, and I'd like you to stop. Not complicated, but you see the difference is that I'm making a request, and it's based on just what you say and what you do. I don't know what you're thinking. I don't know what you're intending. It's like, you just think you're better than me. Okay. You really can't read my mind, so you really don't know. Okay? I can change my behavior. I can change what I say and what I do.